Welcome to Days in the Wild Big Game Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. A couple things before we jump into this episode. Please, you heard me say a million times, go give us a review on iTunes. Helps me keep this podcast free and helps with the ratings. Also, go check out Phoenix Shooting Bags. If you use our promo code John Stallone, all one word, you save 20% off on anything. And it's not just shooting bags. They do glassing pads. They're working on some other really cool stuff coming up here for the hunter, bow hunters also. So go check them out, phoenixshootingbags.com. And if you're looking for a really good hunt, I have some really good opportunities for you. Hit us up on daysinthewild.com or check out my blog, johnstallone.me, and send us an email. If you're looking to do a coos deer hunt, javelina, mule deer in South Dakota, we got some opportunities in California as well. So give me a call if you're looking to do something different this year and like to get on a special hunt. Days in the Wild Outfitters, and we'll take care of you. Without further ado, let's jump into this episode. Welcome to Days in the Wild Big Game Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today we're going to do something a little different, doing a little solo podcast. Because I kept getting questions about this stuff directed towards me, and two, I really didn't have time to put anything together, and I wanted to get this out there before the season. I don't really like doing solo podcasts. One, contrary to popular belief, I don't like hearing the sound of my own voice. And two, I think it kind of lacks in the interaction and whatnot. But we're going to give it a go and see how it works, and hopefully I'll be able to answer these questions. Most of the questions I've gotten have been about preseason prep. So instead of addressing the questions directly, I'm going to tell you all the things that I do to get myself hunt ready with my weapon, specifically. So we're going to talk mostly about bow hunting, but you can apply a lot of these tactics and a lot of these things that I do to hunting with a rifle. You know, fitness and all that stuff, that's definitely part of it, especially if you're doing physical type hunts. So I'm gonna talk a little bit about that, but mostly it's gonna be about what I do to prepare my mind and my body for the hunt with the weapon specifically. So I'm gonna start by saying this. Dots are for sighting in. When I'm sighting in my bow, I shoot at the smallest dot that I can possibly see at whatever distance I'm shooting. So as I move back, the dot has to get a little bit bigger because I won't be able to pinpoint it. My pin will be too big to cover it up. But after sighting in, I very rarely, unless I'm checking the bow for accuracy and yardages, you know, to make sure that it hasn't lost anything. I don't shoot at dots. There's no dots. I mean, there might be some dots, but there are probably multiple dots on a deer or elk or whatever. Actually, there's no dots on either of those unless you're shooting at little animals, babies. But you get the point. If you're shooting at an axis deer or whatever, there's dots. But so my practice is always done with a 3D target. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a 3D target that is anatomically correct to the animal that you're hunting. So meaning I don't expect you to go buy an elk target to go practice shooting for an elk hunt, even though I've done that in the past, in years past. But what I do want you to get used to is looking for leg position, looking for things that your body, your brain's going to start picking up and remembering and recognizing, more than remembering, recognizing places to hold on a deer target or you know, whatever that you pick up. I often actually shoot at a javelina target, and the reason why I do that is because, one, it's all black. It's very hard for me to pick a spot on it. There's no like real crease that you'll find on a lot of these 3D targets and so on and so forth. So one of the things, like when we hunt javelina, that even myself, I do it quite often, I've done it many times, is we always shoot a little far back on them. So and it's small and it's portable, and I could, it's cheap too. They're super cheap. They're small targets. And I just keep it in the back of my truck. Those are the main reasons. But I mean, I would prefer to shoot at a deer because it's the most accurate and will give you the most accurate view of most ungulates, you know. Again, going back to fusion, antelope, elk, whatever, it's about the same. Obviously, an elk's way bigger, but if you can shoot a small deer target in the right spots from the right angles, you could do it on an elk. So I'm going to start off by telling you a little story. My first ibex hunt, which is when I got mine, I was super prepared. I knew that I was going to be shooting very steep angles, very long distances at a small target. I went as far as actually going to buy an ibex 3D target, and I spent months shooting, like I said, shooting super steep angles, rocky situations, and I was putting myself through the rigors of the hunt, climbing up to a spot, putting my target way down low, and then climbing up this rock face to get into position. Obviously, you know, you wouldn't do that on an animal, but it was getting my heart rate going. I was doing the work, getting into position, and then when I, you know, when I got to the top, I would stalk the animal from the top and like only get into a spot that I knew that I would be able to get a shot if this was a real animal, and taking those crazy angles, you know, whatever look I got, quarter way, quarter two, whatever, I was taking everything and anything possible, and I felt super confident, and we're going to talk about this confidence thing a little bit after this, but remember confidence, because everything we do is building confidence. And I had all the confidence in my equipment I had, and just so you know, I was practicing with my backup bow as well in case I had a failure, that I wouldn't lose my confidence, that my confidence wasn't just in the one weapon. I did that, like I said, for months and months. And then, of course, I did the physical activity, constantly putting myself into positions that I thought I would be faced with when I was on the mountain. And going into the hunt, like I said, super confident. I end up getting one, okay? I was faced with difficult shots. I made a 75-yard shot on this billy, and he went down relatively quickly, and it was, you know, unfortunately, now fast forward to the next year, I drew it back to back years. I barely practiced at all. And it's only 1 year later, and I had a full year hunting. I had a fantastic 2015. I think I shot like 9 different animals. I had a stellar year. In 2016, I was not practiced well at all. And I had a new bow from Matthews. And, you know, other than sighting it in, I didn't spend a whole lot of time with it leading up to my hunt. And it showed. I actually missed three times. I missed three times when I was there. And it was all mental errors. And I feel like if I had been as well practiced as I was going into the first hunt, I would have been successful on the second hunt, because the second hunt I was more familiar with the mountain. I was more familiar with the animal. I got and created more opportunities on the second hunt than I had on the first hunt. Meaning I was within range. I actually passed on a few billies that were younger, smaller, whatever, that I had opportunity to shoot at like sub 50 yards. And I just, when the time came and when I decided to make a shot, I missed three times. And I think it was a direct result of not practicing for the game. I had spent time shooting my bow and sighting it in and was comfortable with it, but I never put myself through the rigors of the hunt and the situations of the hunt. So my mind wasn't ready. The muscle memory of shooting those types of shots wasn't there. So on and so forth. So you see where I'm going with this. Basically, I treat every hunt as its own season. Now, in the preseason, like all spring long, all summer long, when you're leading up to all your hunts, you can practice for the game. You can do, I say practice for the game, so meaning practice for the type of animal, the type of terrain, type of hunt that you're going to do, whether that's sitting in a tree stand, whether that's in a ground blind, spot and stalk, still hunting. You have to look at how you're going to hunt those animals. And leading up to your first hunt, let me back up a little bit. So what I do is from the end of hunting season to like June, I'm practicing everything. Anything and everything possible. And then my first hunt's usually in July, late July. I go hunt blacktail in California. So then my practice for that last few weeks leading up are specifically for that hunt. And I treat every hunt like its own season. So now after that hunt's done, it's deer hunting here in Arizona this year. Okay, so I'm going to now start practicing in the couple weeks that I have for that hunt. And putting myself through the motions. Okay, am I going to be spot stalking? Am I going to be sitting ground blind over water? I'm going to be doing whatever I'm going to be doing. I'm going to put myself in those situations, and I'm going to practice that way. It seems pretty simple, but you got to be able to put yourself in the mind, in the mindset, and of what you're going to be faced with. Think about what situations. You know, a lot of guys that don't hunt out of tree stands, okay, for instance, and this would seem very simple, okay, you're usually making a 20, 30-yard shot when you're in a tree stand, right? A slam dunk for us guys out here out west, you know, because we're constantly shooting 50, 60, 70, 80 even. What happens is you get yourself and you got to put yourself in a contorted position. You're shooting behind the tree. And your body mechanics are different. It's different than standing in front of a bag or standing in front of a block target, whatever, with a dot on it. Again, we'll go back to the dot, and perfect archer's tee, perfect form, perfect grip, counting through your motions. Hunting is not that way. That's archery. Those are the things you need to know for archery and to be a great target shooter is form, 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 dot, 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 follow all the things. I have terrible form. If you look at a textbook, I have terrible form. I've been consistently good for years and years and years, and I've been competitive even in target archery because I put myself in enough positions and situations that my body knows that it can make the shot regardless of whatever I'm doing. And I think that's huge. And I think if you want to become next level, those are the things you need to do. And I'll tell you right now, the last few years, 2-3 years, I've been so busy outside of hunting. And I think also a lot of it has to do with, I had another child, 5 years ago. So my son's five, and the first couple of years it wasn't so bad because, you know, mommy was mostly, you know, dealing with that, and he wasn't in sports and he wasn't in school and blah, blah, blah. So, but the last few years between work, my work situation and my home life, I don't practice quite as much as I did before. I don't do quite as much as the things. And I know that, and you add some age, okay, I'm older now, I'm 45. There's only time, okay, like I got to make a choice. Do I go work out this morning and keep my body in shape, or do I go shoot my bow? And it's tough, you know, and I'm sure this is all stuff you guys need to deal with too, you know. But I know as a result of that, not being as well practiced, my success rate has gone down. And the crazy thing is my opportunities have gone up. And that comes with the more experience you have, you know, the more time you've spent in the field over the years, and more, you know, you just know how to create opportunities more. And so it's not that my hunting abilities have gone down. They've actually increased. They've gotten better. But the success rate has gone down a little bit. And a little bit too might be because I'm looking for a little bit better age class too. But I'm a little bit more discerning, I guess, when it comes to animals. But for the most part, it comes down to the fact that I'm not as well practiced, that I know I'm not as well practiced. I'm not going into each hunt with the same confidence. There's a lot of things you can do. You could play games. You know, you can what's a good word I'm looking for here? Just put yourself in a situation that you know you're going to be in. And as simple as that, like do a mock. That's the word I was looking for, like a mock hunt. You know, set up your 3D target or have your buddy set up the 3D target, and you don't know what angle it's going to be, and you go still hunting through the flats or whatever, and you come up on it, and once you see it, and then you work yourself into a position to shoot it. Those things are huge, because when you're faced with that stuff later on, your mind and your body's going to be like, oh, I've been in this situation before. I got to be quiet. I got to be deliberate with my movements. I got to be deliberate with my draw. I'm going to be on my one knee around this tree. I'm going to have to stand up behind this bush. Whatever the case may be, you know, I might have to draw behind something, then step out. Whatever the case may be, you've been there before. And it's not going to be so panicked. You're not going to be shocking your body and shocking your mind, because all it's known is perfect archer's tee in a, you know, very controlled environment. You know, shooting to 80 yards, again, at a block target, doesn't do much for you. It really doesn't. You become familiar with your bow, you build confidence, but you're only building confidence in that one parameter, that one situation where you're 80 yards, you're a perfect archer's tee standing, and a block target is, you know, I don't know. It's just not, it's not going to give you what you really need, because the chances of you making or getting a shot or getting an opportunity that resembles that is very slim to none. Even the ground makes a difference. If you're on flat ground where your feet are perfectly, you know, parallel and your feet are at the same level, I mean, put your foot up on top of a bucket, 1 foot down, whatever. Stuff like that is going to change the way you shoot. It's going to alter your shot process. Now, in elk hunting, we talk about calling and long holds and all that stuff. So like that stuff comes into play. Adding a stop sound, that comes into play. So when I'm practicing before I go leading up to an elk hunt, I like to shoot from my knees. I like to shoot from my butt. I like to shoot leaning up against the tree. And I also like to do it by making it, you know, the cow sound or my bark or whatever that I'm going to do, make the sound and then shot and make the shot. Then also tracking how often you got an elk walking in and you're already at full draw and you're moving the bow with the elk and you're waiting for him to come to that window and he's about to hit that window. Now your mind is starting to panic. He's coming to that window. Make the stop sound. He stops, anchor, shoot. Those things, I got videos, I mean, years and years of videos on YouTube of all kinds of stuff like this. Some of my drills that I do, some that I have that very specific elk scenario that I was telling you on my YouTube. I mean, I've been putting this content out for 15 years plus. So I'll definitely link it to this and it's out there. So if you want to see specifically, if you have any questions specifically about, you know, you got to hunt, what should I be doing? Whatever. I'll be happy to answer those for you. So I wanted to share another story with you. Don't remember exactly which year it was, but I was hunting in Illinois for whitetail. Pretty much every year, and I'd gotten on this property, and I found a freaking stud buck. Would have been the biggest buck of my life. And you know, towards the end of the hunt, I finally figured him out, and I moved my stand, got to a spot where I thought that I could, you know, make a move on him. And sure enough, that morning, he came down the trail and he stopped. And the way my setup was, I didn't trim out a lot of stuff. I had this one branch that I kind of left purposely to keep me covered because I wasn't as high as I'd like to be. Well, actually, I was up in the tree really high, but the trail that he came down was sloped up to me. So anything that came down that would be at eye level at one point coming through. So that's why I left the branch. Anyway, so this buck sure as hell, he comes down this trail where I thought he would, and had seen him, you know, from a distance a couple times too. And he came and he stops. And he stops and I don't know if he caught me moving or what, but he stopped. And he was kind of looking in my direction. And then he turned his head. So when he turned his head, I drew back. And I anchored my pin. And I had this branch to contend with. So my two choices were I could kind of squat my knees a little bit and shoot under the branch, or stay perfectly standing and comfortable and just basically put my pin where I was just enough that that I can see the arrow was going to clear, you know, clear the branch. But in doing that, I was probably going to hit him high. But I didn't think it was going to be high enough given the angle, and I thought maybe, you know, it was going to do the job. But so I decided to stand up. I felt it was easier. I felt I can make that shot. Anyway, so I shot. And of course, I hit him high, essentially backstrapped him, hit him higher than I thought because, you know, the deer reacted and dropped down. And what I should have did was squat down and shoot low, because he would have dropped into it. So my choices were, do I aim low or do I aim high because I got this branch? Or let him walk, which is probably what I should have did. But I didn't. I was young. I was excited. That 170-inch plus deer in front of me. Anyhow, The moral of the story is, actually, I had been practicing all preseason long for my Western hunts. I had an antelope hunt early in the season. I had a mule deer hunt, so I was shooting long distances. I didn't have, you know, I was shooting from my butt, shooting from my knees, but I never once got up in a tree stand the whole season. So my body was very used to making these long shots, and I was dialed in. Back then when my eyesight was good, I could hit a tic-tac at 60 yards, no problem, you know? And that might sound like an exaggeration, but it's true. I was that well practiced and that good of a shot when I was younger. And I was floored. I ate myself up for years because I had missed that opportunity. I had never had another opportunity on a buck that of that caliber until many years later. And it just goes to show that you're a product of your practice. And yes, some of that story, some of that situation was a mental error on my part. I should have took the low road. I took the high road. And like I said, you know, coming all through this podcast so far was that you need to put your body in positions that you're going to be faced with. So I mentioned practicing for an antelope hunt for that same year. I think it was my first antelope. Either my first or my second antelope. It was my second antelope. So this would have been probably 2004, I think, maybe. Yeah, I think so. 2004. No, God, it was before that. Anyway, sorry. All these years and stuff, they're kind of melting into each other, and I'm starting to not remember exact details about things anymore. But so I had been practicing for the antelope hunt, and the year before, I know this was my second antelope, because the year before, I didn't know what to expect. I practiced long shots, you know, I practiced what I would do for like mule deer and stuff like that, but I didn't do very specific things that I do now when I go antelope hunting, because I know, given the terrain, there's going to be times where I'm going to have to draw in a concealed position, like crouch behind a, you know, 18-inch tall sagebrush and bent all the way over to draw and then pop up and shoot, or be on my back, pop up and shoot. Now, I don't know if you guys have ever seen that video of me, the hunt that I'm talking about, actually the kill shot. I was laying on my back because we were in this open sagebrush and we had crawled. It was about 18 to 24 inches tall, and we crawled through it to get into position. And this buck was running this doe around, and we finally got to a spot where I was like, okay, we're close enough. I'm going to try to make the shot. But I knew that if I had popped up, drew back, and he had seen me do that, the likelihood of me getting him was going to be slim to none. So I needed the surprise factor. So I drew back while I was laying down on my back, and I bit a sit up in full draw, aimed, shot, made the shot. That was my biggest antelope at the time. Well, it was only my second, but it's still actually one of my biggest antelope. But that is something that I had practiced a whole bunch leading up to that hunt, because I recognized the year before that might be something I needed to do. Now, even though I scored on the first year, I shot a little buck on the last day, a buck that I had passed three or four times, and he was just a little immature and didn't really, you know, didn't pay me the respect as a predator as much as a mature animal would. So I got away with a lot more, and I just ended up getting one because I got lucky. Now, that second year, I went into it with a whole different mindset, and I was only hunting mature animals. I was the number 11 Pope and Young for spot and stalk for many years. And, you know, it was all about recognizing the situation, recognizing the terrain, and coming up with a practice game plan that made sense, that I knew that when I got there, I was going to be well practiced and ready for the hunt. We talked a little bit about elk hunting earlier, and I would say for the most part, guys are spending time practicing calling and becoming a proficient caller, which is great and it's necessary. There are other things that are, I think, even a little bit more important, which is understanding elk language, not necessarily being proficient at making the sounds. But it's more important to understand behavior and understand the language so that you can interpret what sounds you need to make. I also think it's super important because I've seen it as a guide many times. Now, when you're on a guided hunt, your guide is reading the elk, is doing a lot of the stuff that you would need to be proficient at if you're doing it on your own. But the thing you do need to be proficient at is the killing part. So we talked about some of the drills. I want to get a little bit more specific in that because they've been very popular for me on YouTube and my articles and so on and so forth. So I know it's something that guys are interested in. One of the drills that I like to do is I like to set up, I mean, it all depends on how many targets you have, but, you know, anywhere from 3 to 5, 6 targets and set them at different distances and set them on a, like, 100-degree plane from you. When I mean from left to right, you have 100 degrees of motion. So you can travel almost, you can even do, I mean, it depends on how well your torso twists. I mean, if you could do 180, God bless you. But, you know, most guys have between 100 and 140 degrees in a kneeling position or seated position that they can swing the bow from one side to the next. And I like to start at pretty much one target on each extreme on the left side and the right side, and then stack, set up the other ones in between that. And what I like to do is I like to have somebody stand behind me and make the barking noise, okay, or a grunt or a cow sound, okay. And why I do that is I'll start from the left or start from the right, and I'll start panning from target to target, and they're all at different yardages, right? So I'm going to start panning left to right, let's say, and then my partner barks as I'm coming to, I don't know, the second target or the third target or the fourth target, whatever. And I have a couple of seconds just to settle and make the shot. So what that's simulating is an elk coming from one side to the next, coming into an opening and making a stop noise. And you can do that also on your own. If you don't have a partner, is just practice. You could start in the middle, pan to the right, pan to the left, bark, shoot, and just do that. That's like huge. And I often do that on my knees. I feel like for whatever reason, I tend to get down on my knee to make a shot in the elk woods more than any other position. Sometimes seated because I could stay in a seated position longer, more comfortably. I find that a lot of the elk woods, especially if you're hunting in like dark timber or thicker stuff, you need to be able to shoot under the understory. So you get a better, or you could see more too, so you might be able to see the elk for a longer distance when you're down low. And it just gives me a sense of concealment, you know, up against a tree, whatever, just feel less out in the open than standing. Some guys might argue with me about that, and they might be right, but that for me, that's what it is. So I try to do that practice from my knees and from a seated position. The tracking thing is very important. Also, another thing I like to do is I like to do long holds. So I will hold on one side, let's say for 30 seconds, a minute. And what I do is I hold off. I don't look in my peep. I'm at full draw, but my head is out of the sighting mechanism. I'm not looking. I'm not sighting in on the bow. I'm not lining up pins or my peep sight. When you line up your pins and your peep sight, you get tired faster and you tend to get more target panic and you tend to bob the pin up and down way more. So if you hold, the elk starts walking, make your stop sound. When it comes to that lane where you had the target set, make your stop sound. We'll get into the sighting. I get into the sighting system. I get into my, you know, looking into the pin, getting into the sight as the elk is approaching where I want it to be. That way I'm already looking through. I've already got the pin on its body. When it stops, it's going to be less time for me to find where I want to aim, anchor, shoot, and make the shot. Go pick up my elk off the ground. But I know I make it sound so simple. Those things are golden. Like learning how to do that and taking that time to practice that is golden. Like I said, it's just you can't beat lifelike practice. So when I was in college, my first degree is in corporate fitness and wellness. I was actually went to school, become a physical therapist and whatnot before I got my master's in rangeland management and ecology. So I understand the physical world really well because that was part of my life. We did a lot of sports specific training. I used to work in the training room at Grand Canyon University. I worked with the soccer players and the basketball team and women's tennis. And we did a lot of sports specific training. And that translates over to bow hunting. You're an athlete. You're doing something that requires precision and you need to develop muscle memory and build confidence. And the way to do that is through your practice. Another thing that I've done over the years, and I've been preaching doing this as a preseason, what's the word? I guess preseason practice is hunting. I bow hunt coyotes year round. And the reason why I got into it initially was for practice, to get more experience. Builds your woodsmanship. You learn how to play wind. And the principles of calling to coyotes is the same as calling turkey, same as calling deer, same as calling elk. I did a seminar recently, last year before elk season, on how calling, basically the commonality in all calling and why calling one animal translates over to another animal and the setup is everything and so on and so forth. Anyway, so this all came about through my coyote hunting and my predator hunting in general. And it's a great way for one to get better at target acquisition fast. Judging distances when you don't know exactly, you know, you don't have time to, oh, the coyote's there. Let me get my rangefinder out. Let me rearrange. You have pre-ranged a bunch of stuff leading up to the coyote coming in, and You're making a guesstimate based on your markers. Like I said, you learn how to play wind, how animals use the wind thing when they come into a call. So you, all these things play. So it's a really great tool for hunting elk and turkey and stuff like that, even though turkey don't really use the wind. But the thing is, it's a lifelike scenario. And if you can make a shot on a coyote with your bow that you've called in, you could definitely make it on an elk. And you're dealing with the same things. You're looking for obstructions. That's something that you can't do with your practice. Like, you know, when you set up a target somewhere, you know where that target is. When a coyote comes in, it's going to come in where it wants to come in. Yes, there's ways to direct them and ways to kind of get them to come a certain way and give you a certain look, but it's not precise. And being able to recognize the obstructions and to make those decisions on the fly, all that stuff comes about from the practice. So I highly recommend, if you're, you know, in an area with a decent coyote population, which I don't know really where there isn't anymore in the United States, you can go do this. And most states are year round for coyotes. So you got great opportunity to do this in the off season. Are you going to watch a bunch of coyotes run off, and are you going to break some arrows, going to lose some stuff? Yeah, you are, but it's going to give you something that you never had. And I tell you, when you've done it a few times and you get proficient at it, there is no elk that's going to come in the woods that's going to be more difficult than a coyote. So, that being said, I feel like I'm beating a dead horse. You get where I'm going with all this. If you have any specific questions or need some help trying to develop a game plan for your off-season practice or your preseason prep, whatever you want to call it, feel free to reach out to me, and I will give you suggestions, because more than likely I've done it. I've done just about everything over the years to improve my success rate and my chances. Yeah, I think that's it. I am going to call it, and hope you enjoyed the podcast. I hope it helps everybody out. Do me a favor, go check out Phoenix Shooting Bags. And don't forget to give us a review on iTunes or the Podbean app. Appreciate it. We'll see you next time.